You're listening to Torch Talk with Chris, Kyle, and Dana on the Sidious Mag podcast, presented by Hayward Magic. Hayward Magic is a new, unique, and fresh editorial channel on Instagram that captures the magic and intensity of track and field. Their mantra is hashtag make it to Hayward, because Hayward is not just a place, but a state of mind. It's where guts meets magic. I've been a fan of the account since it started a few months ago. You may have seen them on Instagram stories with some of their motivational posters and sayings. One of my personal favorite things that they do are these newspaper headlines when records are broken. So look out for those during the games, because I'm sure we're going to see world records and American records dropping left and right. Recently, they've released a few awesome stop motion and claymation shorts that they've put together. Those take so much work and time, so to see it happening for our sport and our stars is particularly cool. We've seen the comments. Who's behind this account? What's happening? What are they selling? They're actually not selling anything. There's something cool about the RN mystique behind the account, which slowly gets revealed over time, and there's much more to come. All athletes, fans, and feats of guts are welcome. Follow at Hayward Magic on Instagram, because there's no better time to be a fan of track and field with Worlds and Olympics coming up in the years to come. So follow at Hayward Magic and stay tuned for more throughout the next couple days. All right. Another day, another long day of track and field. And here we are, just moments after another world record fell. And again, it came in the 400 meter hurdles. I'm Chris Chavez here with Kyle Merber and Dana Giordano. First off, I mean, how are we doing? The energy levels here, I think, have needed to pick up, I think, just even though it is late. But track and field is getting better and better as we go.
I had this thought today in the sense that of course I'm going to watch every second of everything that's happening, but I'm so tired, and I was like, oh, I really just like love to sleep in, or, you know, have a moment in which I don't have to be in front of the TV or in front of my computer covering this. And then I fast forward to like Sunday and realized it's going to be over soon.
And then
we need to appreciate what we have in front of ourselves right now.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree.
Not having the most, you know, you two are very followed on Twitter. I have slept through a couple races in the mornings. I will admit, not the finals, some semis. I'll catch up later. I'll watch them my own time. But I will say, this live tweeting that you guys do,
it's hard.
You really signed yourself up for something there.
Well, I naturally wake up pretty early every morning, so that hasn't been too big of a deal. But Chris today, first off, he is a snoozer. And I thought he was just setting alarms for every race, but it turns out he just keeps falling back asleep. And you and I, Dana, we watched the 800s this morning together out in the pool house. And then
Olympic Village.
Yeah. I came back inside expecting to see Chris typing away at his computer after what we had witnessed. And he fell back asleep.
Just in between his little snoozes, little cat nap.
And so I woke him up and I was like, you slept through it. And he's like, what did I miss? And I was like, you missed the women's 800. It was
without
one of the best races.
But you didn't spoil it for me.
Oh, that's nice of you.
But then he immediately woke up,
but
got all four screens.
How did he not wake up to a screen? And
okay, so let me explain exactly what happened. There's a creaky door
in the village.
in the house that Kyle and I are staying in. And when it opened, Kyle walked in and it woke me up. And then he's like, whoa, that was amazing. Did you catch that? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I had been watching the 5Ks, and then just after the last one, slowly started drifting off back into sleep, because last night was really long, and I was having trouble uploading the podcast. While you guys were sleeping, I was still grinding. Anyway, it was perfect timing, because when you told me that, the NBC Olympics tweet with the video had just published, and it was the first thing I saw when I opened Twitter. And so I clicked it and I was caught up, and then I was up for the women's 200.
You were just like 2 minutes behind the rest of the world.
Which usually your head, so
yeah.
How'd the turntables turn?
Yeah, it was I mean, I still tweeted the video out pretty quickly,
You're fast.
It didn't go as viral as some of your others because you were slow.
You were late.
Meanwhile, I'm letting my own running suffer so that way I could watch other people's thrive.
I don't know how much it's suffering. Kyle comes in, somehow finagles running in between the morning session, walks in before the women's 800. It's like, I just ran a 5:13 mile at the end of my run today because I felt so good. I'm like, I don't know where
that. Strava gave me 5:14, but my watch gave me 5:13. So there's some debate going on there. But I don't know. I felt good today, and I had a very small window. I went during the 200 semis, and I knew I would have about 40 minutes to just get tired.
This is how
the
rest
of the world
functions.
And then I came back and I watched the replay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, without knowing what happened, and I was caught up. If there's a race to miss, it's the 200s because it takes a minute and a half to catch up.
Well, listen, people signed up for this podcast to hear about what's going on at the Olympics, not on our own running, but I guess I do owe the listeners a little bit of a personal update because you guys have been giving me so much shit over the past couple days about my own running.
It was
a
big day.
If me sacrificing my own personal fitness and my own personal running for the sake of producing content for the sport, then that is the cross that I am willing to carry.
Chris says,
and so, you know what? Today I went out and got out for 10 miles.
No, so Chris says he likes to run in the afternoon, which is kind of it's a little weird because not many people can run in the afternoon normally.
During the summer.
So he likes this window in the afternoon, and I think it's just to have no one notice when he leaves, so we don't have a timer going on.
Well, he used my watch day, so I very much had a timer. And it
well, you were teaching me. I asked you. I'm not as familiar with Polar watches, and so you handed me yours, and I was like, Kyle, how do I start and stop this run? And he says, I'm only going to teach you how to start it because you shouldn't be stopping on these runs. And I was like, just tell me which one is the stop.
Well, then you came back and it uploaded to my phone.
And people thought you doubled.
And people thought I did a huge double with a 10-mile evening run that was not as quick as I would normally be going. So I made sure to delete that.
Okay. But anyway, that's the personal update on my end. But listen, how did we get from the 400-meter hurdles to me running? I have no idea. And we're not going to retrace our steps. But let's talk about that women's 400-meter hurdle race because it was what was being billed as this huge rivalry, the primetime spot for tonight. We had to wait pretty much all. It was
a new
all multi
song.
Yeah, there was a new weekend song. I did catch that.
It was
a
new weekend
song
set to this beautiful friendship rivalry between Dalila and Sydney and a couple other American athletes, but it kind of led off with them. And I'm like, I really hope this ages well.
Wait, that's a music video?
Well, his new song
they
is coming
used,
out.
Like, clips from like the Olympic
it's
trials.
It's about
and stuff.
Like something about breathing. So, you know, they have to be very clear. It's about like, we can play the song later, but
no, we'd lose rights to this podcast.
No, we don't do that. But yeah, we were saying that last night we had the men's 400-meter hurdle final, which was absolutely electric and really, you know, you saw Rye Benjamin upset, Carson Warholm celebrating like crazy. And this race did feel a little bit different just because it was deja vu. You know, we have seen this at the trials. We saw Sydney set a world record, Dalila being right there. The only difference for this time, in my opinion, was Dalila went out so hard that she was like, this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to beat Sydney. I'm going to go as hard as possible that first 300. And unfortunately came a little bit short, but under the previous world record as well.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. And then third place, who I want to dive into a little
bit. New fan of her.
Is Femke Bol, who was a 55-second 400 hurdler just 2 years ago. And then she comes out and gets third place bronze medal for the Netherlands. And she was actually under the old world record up until June, the one that Sydney had broken at the Olympic trials. So just going completely under the radar in so many ways. And as Dalila, you know, is 10 years older and Femke is a little bit more in the...
She's 21.
And is Sydney now 21? Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many years left of these two now competing. It's almost like the passing of batons of rivals. Although who's to say Dalila's
doesn't have a bunch
of years left. She's running as fast as she ever has.
Yeah, it was truly, it lived up to expectations, especially because of the start that I think the little Muhammad got. It looked phenomenal.
I just wanted her to run away with it.
And I was
so
like,
bad.
Whoa, okay. Because there were a lot of doubts cast over Dalila's season just because, I mean, she had a bout with COVID earlier in the year and was really trying to regain form. There was a hamstring injury, and then at the trials got beat by Sydney. But then afterwards in these rounds, she's looked like her old self. And then gets out to a hot start and is just trying to hold on to this thing. And she was through the first, through the final, I think, ninth hurdle. And then Sydney's closing speed, I think they even noted it on the broadcast, when she's on the flats, she's a faster runner than Dalila. And so that was the difference maker here.
I'm going to try to say this as tactfully and as carefully as possible. But a part of me, after the race, I was trying to think why I was maybe yelling a little bit more after the men's race versus the women's. And I think there's this idea that we always say we want the big stars to race each other more and more, and like that's how you grow the sport. And that's definitely something I've echoed plenty of times. But there was an element of the fact that Carson Rye had never really raced since Worlds in
2019,
Doha.
Yeah.
And we just recently saw Sydney and Dalila race. And so in a way, it was kind of like the fact that we had just seen them race and break the world record took a little bit of sting of the excitement out of it for me. And then also the fact that it was an American versus an American.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Rather than a Norwegian versus an American. Because I don't know.
The general public doesn't care. They just want 1-2 American. They don't care what order it is. They just want to see...
But at the same time, I feel like there's the, and not to pit him to like Ivan Drago, but like they got that feel yesterday, I feel like, more where it was Rye Benjamin versus Carson Warholm, and it was like this international clash. And this time around, it's just sort of like, just take 1-2. And it was just like, hold off the Dutch girl from, you know, possibly pulling off this upset. And that was, I think, to me, the only real wild card factor was how, because Femke Bol, I think, ran 52:37 in Stockholm, and it was like, well, she could possibly pull off an upset if she times things right and things line up, and so we just didn't know how she would stack up against the two Americans because they hadn't raced. And that was the only thing of intrigue, I think, for me, aside from Dalila running really hard from the start. Because if Sydney was the same Sydney we saw in Eugene, which there really isn't any reason to think that she wasn't going to be, if anything she had probably gotten better in training and all that kind of stuff, then she was going to win.
I kind of wish that Femke Bol had just gone out super hard. So that way when they would have come back, we would have been yelling for that. But
we were
self-commentating. Yeah. But I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I don't have a fan preference between Sydney and Dalila. Like
I do, but it's because Queens. You wrote that article. I'm from Queens. Okay. Yeah, and I also wrote a feature on Dalila during the after.
Well, then I'll pick Sydney because I'm from New Jersey.
You have the New Jersey tie,
Kyle.
Let's flip a coin.
Pick.
Yeah.
Do you have a coin?
Well, I know Sydney won, so do I? do I go that
way?
Like
you, I mean, rooting
you can
for
have
Femke
Bol.
I've got a coin right now. We're gonna do this live. Kyle,
I would say if anything, the internal dialogue goes, Dalila is a little older and Sydney has probably many left.
All right,
whereas Dalila already has an Olympic gold, so in that regard,
and held the world record for
and we
for
like sharing gold medals.
Sydney.
So
all right, I gave Kyle a coin. He's about to flip it.
Right.
Heads is
New Jersey, and Queens tails. Is tails technically female?
I don't know.
Tails.
All right.
Queens, Dalila boy.
So no, I have
big
I've
Dalila
got a good
guys.
Question. Good question for Kyle. I think this one's more interesting now. Who over 800?
Oh.
Dalila or Sydney?
Oh,
Dalila.
Dalila. Yeah, we've heard rumors of what Dalila's capable of in practice. And then
that's during the fall when she's doing like base training, because you know she would.
You'd arguably be better than during base training.
Mm-hmm.
But you know Sydney's faster in the flat 400. I do hope that they come back, at least one of them, and honestly it should be both, with a thing Mo is in the 4x4.
Ooh, we can't get to a thing Mo just yet.
No, we're going to save that to the tail on the podcast so listeners
can we're just talking about her place in the 4x4, guy. Yeah. I didn't know. I don't even know what happened
you're
in the
You're not allowed to say her name until later.
She must not be named. We had a couple more finals in the morning session, including the really exciting men's pole vault final, which had kind of a really surprise silver medalist in Chris Nielsen of the USA taking the silver in 5.97, which was a really big PB for him. Thiago Braz of Brazil, he was 5.87. He was the 2016 champion. He actually holds the Olympic record. So Mondo was like, no, I'm going to take not only the gold, I'm going to go for the Olympic record. I want the world record, which I already have, and I want to do it all here right now.
He mm-hmm. was so close. He got over
the first
6.19 by
a lot.
By so
he
much.
He seemed confused how
Minus
it came
hitting
down.
The bar.
He hit yeah. it. He skimmed it on his chest.
I wouldn't say hitting, because when I think hitting, skim. it's like yeah. And,
it's
and
a
it,
skim.
I don't even think it was a skim. I think it was brush. It was a light brush. And then it fell.
So they were mentioning this windsock, which I appreciate learning things on the broadcast. So like, if you ever do watch pole vault, there's kind of like a large, you know, kite like thing where you can kind of tell where the wind is coming through. And Bondo looked so good on his first attempt. The second attempt was kind of a wash. I think he was kind of tired, so he was taking his time in the third one, and the wind really did pick up. The windsock was going, and you're like, I just had a chill and I thought he was going to do it. And the third attempt ended up being, it was a little off kilter. I don't know enough about pole vault to know if you really want to stay in the same angle or not, but that first attempt was so beautiful. He was so high over. His hips were like extreme. He's not only going to smash his own world record. I mean, we're going to see Mondo getting that gold for, I don't know, he's 21 too. The
yeah.
kids.
But
it's the night of the kids.
The thing about the pole vault that I find interesting is that this is his first global title. Like, he hasn't won worlds before this, and that just kind of goes to show that you can have a it sometimes can just not be your day in the pole vault. So it's not as much of a guarantee, because Bernard Lavillenie was looking pretty good at the very beginning, and then all of a sudden he wasn't, and everyone else surpassed him. I will say Chris Nielsen doesn't get enough credit as the United States top pole vaulter right now. Yes, you have Sam Kendricks, who like wasn't able to compete because he tested positive for COVID, but I think Kendricks gets a lot of attention because he constantly competes, you know, at the Diamond League level. He had the, you know, awesome viral moment in 2016 and has a Olympic medal from there. He's a two-time world champion. So like, yes, that's all very deserving. But at the same time, like, behind him, Chris Nielsen has really bridged that gap. And today it took a personal best for him in 5.97 to get that silver medal. And so I think we're going to start to see a very similar sort of like
changing,
you know,
up the guard.
Not necessarily, because Sam is young as well.
Oh, Sam.
And he can do this for you know, a couple more years. He loves doing it too. But I just think that the way we also have Dalila and Sydney pushing each other, we could see it with Chris Nielsen and Sam Kendricks for the next couple of years.
What do we have to do to get Mondo back to the USA?
I thought you were gonna say, what do we have to do to get Mondo on the podcast?
No,
like,
I mean,
a lot.
Yeah, definitely a lot of things. But what do we, you know, he's an American Swedish citizen, correct?
Mm-hmm. He chose Sweden. He must love ABBA.
That's it. And I think his mom.
Yeah. He loves his mom, and then he loves ABBA.
His mom loves ABBA.
Yeah,
but he loves his mom. So like, is it money? Is it t-shirts? Is it you just have to have on the podcast?
IKEA.
What is it?
IKEA.
We have those. There's like an entire neighborhood in Brooklyn that is like exclusively in IKEA.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know. I think he's
a Swedish star there. Like, it's nuts to see how crazy they go for him. And that fanfare just isn't here in the United States, and like, maybe he enjoys that, I think, a little bit more.
He still gets, I think, the attention in the U.S.
He does, especially in the Louisiana
so crowd. It's kind of, you know, he kind of has the
speaking
best
speaking of Louisiana
good for him.
He's that very awesome picture of him and Sha'Carri Richardson as LSU freshmen, and they have these little boards that kind of say like who their role model is and what they want to be when they grow up and their favorite color, and his are very innocent.
Like
answers.
3 years ago too.
Yeah. His are like very normal answers, and Sha'Carri's answers are like, my favorite color is gold. Like, and they both put the job that they wanted when they grew up was like to be professional track athletes, and I thought that was amazing.
Did the teacher tell him, like, hey, listen, you might want to reconsider that one doesn't really pay that well?
Yeah, when he's like, well, I'm going to Sweden. It was in
That's how it happened. That's actually the inside scoop.
Hey, Kyle solved his own mystery there.
Yeah.
Quick shout out to the women's hammer throw, because I'm a big throws guy. And we had a final here, which was very interesting to me coming into this, because Anita Wolarczyk from Poland is by far the greatest women's hammer thrower of all time. She has, I believe, the top, coming into this, had the top 15 throws in history, world record 82-98, 4 world championship gold medals, the last 2 Olympic gold medals. She was undefeated in 42 straight contests from 2014 to 2017. And there was some doubt around her coming into this, because she underwent a season-ending knee surgery in July 2019. And so while her world record is 82-98, her season's best coming into the Olympics was only 77-93 to be the third best in the world. And so maybe she had an outside chance of probably hitting the podium, because that's what it would sound like for a bit, and especially considering all the factors. Deanna Price, I believe, had the world-leading mark coming into this, but was injured, and I think finished way back in what?
She was eighth, and then Brooke Anderson was 10th, and Gwen Berry finished 11th to round out the U.S. The cutest moment was Anita. She was, they have, you know, trying to bring the friends and family into it. She walked over. They have it all set up, and it must take so much time and coordination. So she walked over and was so excited, interacted with her family, and they definitely couldn't hear her at all. Like, there was nothing, no language, but she was just so, so happy.
It has every right to be, because, you know, after that knee surgery and coming back from it, it just was like, she's still good, really, really good, but is she done? And then in the biggest stage, this is what a champion does, shows up and adds yet another world record. I mean, like, the GOAT status has never been clearer in one of the events than this, because just absolute dominance over the past, decade possibly with her? Yeah.
It's tough for Deanna, just knowing that she's thrown over that mark on a few different occasions this year and just had that untimely foot injury, but hopefully back quick, and, you know, let's win on home soil next year.
Yeah, no, that's actually what it would be. I've been thinking more and more about that too. It's just sort of like, yeah, the Olympics with no fans. Yes, it is the Olympics, but if you didn't get what you wanted, the opportunity is there next year.
And the year after that.
Yeah.
And the year after that.
Yeah, but especially next year with it being in Eugene and cooking up some of that. Yeah, I'm going to plug it. Hayward Magic.
There you go.
Yeah.
Speaking of the magic and dominance too, women's 200 meter final. Next event on deck. Elaine Thompson Hurrah. National record 21.53.
Now, 2-time double Olympic gold medalist.
So one in 16, both events, the 100 and the 200, comes back, does it again. First woman to pull that off. And I saw someone, I think, mentioned it on Twitter, was that if she can do this again at the next Olympics, then she'd match Usain Bolt's, you know, triple-double. And right now, she's only getting better, because with the win today, she moves into number 2 all-time, only behind FloJo. So now she's behind FloJo in both the 100 and the 200, because, 21.53 is quick. So right now she doesn't have any world records, but that's a little bit of a shame, I think, because if we really think about it, that FloJo 100-meter world record is just so far out there that it's like, you know, there's all the theories about the wind readings and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for those who aren't familiar, do you want to just give a quick?
Quite honestly, I'm not familiar.
It's a really long sort of thing to explain. Basically, but the wind read zero.
The wind read 0-0, and apparently it was a very blustering day.
So she found the car that the Italian 100-meter winner was running behind in that viral video.
Yeah.
And then she put it around the whole stadium and was in a bubble.
Yeah. So okay. That'd be good.
Yeah, so that's
checks out.
That's, you know, the conspiracy theory that certain people have.
So there's actually a oral history done about this. Kevin Sully from who works with FlowTrack and has done the House of Run podcast actually wrote a whole long form feature on it called
Got I think some
the
assigned wi- reading for
the
myself.
Wind the Wind Red Zero, and it's really really good. You kind of do walk away from it being like, yeah, and there's nothing we can do about it.
You know, something that I saw, and this is diving it. This we're gonna go
on a
down the
tangent.
Rabbit hole yeah. Right now on this. But after the race, Elaine posted.
Oh, this is awesome.
On Instagram, you know, her Olympic gold medal winning yeah. race. She posted the NBC video, and she got struck by Instagram
she
and
got a
banned.
2-day block.
She got a 2-day in the penalty box for posting races of herself.
Where's
she could have asked me not like, hey, do you think it's a good idea? And I would tell her,
nah,
don't do it. You're gonna get locked out of your account, like I did.
Where's the name, image, likeness scenario? You know, if it's you, if you win gold,
I think about this all the time.
You should
like, some
post.
Of these places don't come down on athletes for sharing it, but it, when it's me or when it's someone else, then they're like, yeah, strike one on you.
So
strike
are you two. Glad that she's in the penalty box with you right now?
You know, I'm not going to say rules are rules.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's kind of so silly about just you want to get eyeballs on this thing. And then when it's something is going viral, then all of a sudden you just say,
oh, my gosh,
we're going to nip it in the butt and it's gone and no one can see it.
So again. Gabby Thomas.
She's so good at running. And I loved her reaction because, you know, I think on the starting line, she's obviously thinking about the potential of winning, right? Mm-hmm. Like given how well she's been running this year. And I'm always very relieved when I see someone that they're not upset that they didn't win. Like she was pumped and she should be. What a huge breakthrough couple of years.
Yeah. No, and I definitely think so because she was trying to just, if you may try and make sense of it, it's like you have now the 100-meter champion from just a couple days ago showing flashes of possibly being in, you know, Olympic record shape. So you're thinking, that's what I have to go up against. Yes, you do have the, you know, the credentials of the second fastest woman in the world up until this moment. You've got the runner from Namibia.
Christine Mboma.
Yeah, who charged and closed really hard
what
in the semifinal.
50.
U20 yes. world record again, breaking her own.
Yeah, in 21:81, and that's what it's gotten down to. And so, all in all, when you think of all the factors and the things that Gabby Thomas was up against, bronze feels great, and she was pumped.
Yeah, first Harvard women's track alum to win an Olympic medal, so that's pretty cool.
Smart. Give it up for Heps.
There you go.
What is the most accomplished HEP school at the Olympic level?
It's probably Harvard way back when it was like all you had to do was show up.
Yale's pretty good. They've got Frank Shorter.
Yeah, but I think there's like, if you got to go watch like 1800s. They just
no, modern Olympics.
Modern Olympics.
Someone tweet at us because we could just skim on this one and we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely...
You failed Columbia.
It's not Dartmouth.
You failed Dartmouth.
Columbia's had a number of international Olympians.
Medals, all in all. I'm not
medals.
Just saying...
Medals.
Yeah.
Dartmouth's definitely better at the Winter Olympics. It's cold enough.
I want summer and I want track specific. What is the most accomplished Ivy League school?
Lou Gehrig went to Columbia.
Yeah.
I'm going it's probably Harvard and they know it.
Princeton, all right. We'll go with Harvard.
I don't know.
Even though it's the first Olympic track medal, what did we... Is it... People qualified for the Olympics are medals.
I'm saying medals.
Oh, then it can't be Harvard if she's the first.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll figure this out by the next episode. Or if someone knows, tweet at us because I'm curious about it now. You know, I'm not a Heps guy, but, you know, I could pretend to be. All right. Then on the flip side of this, I just want to touch on the men's 200-meter semifinal.
Oh.
Because... I think the only thing that was really kind of notable to me, because this was the pocket.
There were three notable things.
At least two things.
All right. Well,
there are three Americans.
Yeah, but let me get. So again, guys, I slept through some of this in the morning.
We'll tell you what happened.
And I was watching some. I was watching some of it later. But the 200-meter semifinal, I think for me was really interesting. Was the third one where Noah Lyles finishes mm-hmm. third, but it was like really close. Apparently Lewis Johnson asked him on the broadcast, like, hey, you tied for third, which is like something really, it's kind of weird to tell someone they tied for something at the Olympic level.
Have you seen the high jump?
No, but I'm saying in the sprints, or especially something that you have, like, there's a photo finish that can decide this.
There's definitely a gap right here where Lewis Johnson is breaking this news. Why is that his role? Like, they get up the, okay, I love the stairs. They get up the stairs. Where's the big jumbotron? Like, shouldn't yeah. Noah Lyles already know this?
Lewis Johnson has this like weird role where he kind of coaches.
He's also like
right, like
in therapy, I guess.
Yeah, like yeah. he's playing. He's like doing it all.
So the thing is, too, you have to keep in mind is there's someone in his ear, and like there's someone telling him like you should ask this.
Sometimes
and
it's
you
like
have
the
to weigh. You know, it's like, all right, how are you going to do this in the moment sometimes? You know what you can prepare and you can control, but it is a tough role. So when I see someone coming at him, like David Melly, who gets his third consecutive day of a shout out on the podcast, it's like, come on, dude. Like, he's got a hard, hard job and a lot of things to balance. But yeah, no, I've seen a lot of, you know, armchair people just kind of yelling at, you know, hey, why are you doing it this way? And,
you know, when they have the celebrities.
All right. Chris, trying to try out for NBC one day here.
Well, you know, when they have the celebrities mic'd up and then they have on whatever late daytime TV shows and they tell the celebrities to go and do weird things. It's definitely not what's happening. They're just giving him stats in his ears and he's done it for so long.
It's like that prank show with the Staten Island guys.
Oh, Impractical Jokers.
Yeah, that's like,
I like that show.
Yeah.
Definitely not like that, but.
So, only thing was, it was like I was a little nervous for Noah Lyles, but I do like
the short shorts.
Kenny Bedarek is looking.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going to talk about Noah's short shorts, which were sweet.
Oh, but I thought we were talking about Arian Knighton, but
yeah, no, Arian Knighton, the two of them look great. Like,
unbelievable.
I would kind of say, it's not that hot of a take to say that those two look better than Noah Lyles right now.
But that was the case at the trials as yes. well.
So maybe it's just saving enough juice in the battery for the grand finale.
Knighton came off the turn and he wasn't even in first and he was already looking around. It was like he knew that he had this whole other gear.
Wasn't he like somewhat behind? And there's a lot going on in it.
Yeah, he's so young to the sport at this level, I think, that like it's a good thing. Where it's kind of just
he
treated as just like
the tunnel and
just another race. And and the fact that the crowd, the stands are empty and all that kind of stuff, it only benefits the younger runners, which we'll get to another younger runner who really benefited from this in the 800, but that's much later on in the podcast.
I don't think it's much later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, what time is it? Is it much later on?
Well, I mean, really, the other events that happened today, we had some men's shot put qualifying. We had the 5K.
Wait, but we, as big throws guys, we can't overlook the shot put qualifying. I've got Joe in this. You know, I'm writing a book with Joe Kovacs.
The thrower.
Okay. Yeah, and so he made me sweat it out looking at the results. Again, I was napping during this part, but he only threw 20.93 to snag a little cue, and it was the second throw of the day. Krauser was one and done, 22.05, and the next best throw of the day was Tom Walsh, 21.45.
That was a great throw by Tom Walsh, and initially I think it was ruled a foul, and then they gave it back to him. But Krauser, we know, is Mr. Consistency.
It's like this time around he went, I'm hitting one home run and I'm going back.
But Joe,
that's why the throws qualifying are a little, like, they really can just get one and leave.
Yeah. But it was concerning that Joe had to do three throws.
Joe's thing is never, you know, he's different than Ryan, and you can maybe get more to this.
Different.
So Joe, every now and then, will just absolutely launch one, and you never know when it's going to be, mm-hmm. and just hopefully times it right to be in a couple days.
So I think the shot put final is tomorrow. If we take a quick look at the schedule. I have no idea what day it is right now. But I think one thing to consider was there
tomorrow
was the gap of time that happened in Doha. This is something that Joe and I have discussed as to why the throws competition in at the 2019 World Championships was so good was because they had, I think, a little bit more rest in between the two sessions. And in that case, like, Joe's very big on his central nervous system. Like, that's the big thing that he focuses on.
I'm also really big on Joe's central nervous system.
And he just shuts down. Hotel room, it's totally pitch black dark.
Really?
And it's just, like, sleeping, resting himself. And it's like, and will not emerge until it's time to, like, getting Subway sandwiches brought to
He's
his
like
hotel.
A bear.
And it's like, ooh, then he will emerge.
Don't awake the bear.
For the final. And so it's just rest, rest, rest. That's the most important thing. And
I'm fascinated by this.
We'll have to read more about it in the book.
Go back to and listen to the episode that I did with him in December 2019. And he talks a lot about this. And for me, that was, I just found it really interesting. And so it's kind of like,
is he sleeping or is he waiting?
He's sleeping and waiting. It's great. And so that's why I kind of am like, three throws, like, how much did that take out of Joe? Because he needs to recharge the battery as soon as he gets back and go back, retreat to the hotel.
It's a big
and,
battery.
And it's, yeah, and it's three throws versus one throw. Like, but I will say, maybe throwing 20 meters doesn't feel as exerting to him now as it would have been a couple years back because his PR is 22 high, yeah.
Definitely not as exerting as 5K qualifying rounds.
All right. We'll move into the 5Ks.
I just need to say that everyone hates it. We all complain about it constantly. Clearly, World Athletics and like the IOC doesn't read anyone's tweets. The five automatic qualifiers in the two heats and then having five time qualifiers makes absolutely no sense.
It annoys me
all.
So much. It really just makes being the benefit of being heat two, it's huge. This happens at every event. You just want to be in heat two. If you're in heat one, you're kind of screwed. If no one takes it out, you're just going to try to go for one of those five spots, which is enough spots to be like, okay, I think I can make it. But classic, not everyone's a good enough kicker to get in, so you're going to see casualties that way. And I don't know, it just sucks because if you're not in heat two, you're at a massive, massive disadvantage.
Especially when the first heat goes out, and I think they were like 1330s.
It was 1338, won by Nicholas Camelli, and it was bunched up.
Something so easily replicated by the second heat. They could even jog the first 3K and just start.
They should keep them in the dark and not be able to see it. You know, they should have them be in complete hibernation mode.
With Joe, you have to wait in Joe Kovac's room until it's your time.
They can all be in one side of the room. Yeah.
Well, if we want to kind of look at some of the biggest casualty, I would say from the first heat being slow, was Mark Scott, 0.2 seconds.
And he got tripped up bad with 100 meters to go.
He petitioned to try in advance, and then it was unsuccessful. So Bauerman loses one of their stars, but Woody Kincaid advanced out of the first one. Grant Fisher advanced out of the second one. So did Mohamed.
My highlight was Luis Grava, who trains in the U.S. at NAU under Mike Smith, recently just signed a Hoka professional contract. But the story in the news has been that he is a dreamer. He just has the DACA. And he wasn't allowed to leave the country and eventually had to get petitioned to be able to go and compete for Guatemala. So I'm really happy to see Luis in that final. He deserves to be there.
Yeah.
And it would have been a shame if he wasn't allowed to compete in Tokyo.
Yeah, I guess the way that worked was that he needed to get permission to come back to the country. Leaving was no problem, but if he didn't have this exemption to come back, it was basically that he would have been deporting himself. And so I actually touched base with him a couple days ago, and so expect a podcast with Luis in the coming weeks for sure.
And he bumped out Morgan McDonald.
Yeah, well, there were also two really big casualties in that first heat, and Getnet Wale, who's a 1253 guy from Ethiopia. And then also Daniel Samui Benyo is a 1255 guy that got knocked out from Kenya. So really, it's just such a huge disadvantage to be in that second heat. And was it, did he fall? I think he did. And he got up, and I believe Benyo just got, got straight up and sprinted back right into the spot that he was in.
Yeah.
I believe that was him.
And then that just that's just too much of an exertion that when everyone's, you know, revving up for this big kick and you kind of used a little bit of it before, then you're just not going to be able to catch up. And so I think the second heat I think the coolest part to it was that Chelimo just doesn't like not being in the front, and wants sort of like Stefan Hassan as much of a clean slate as he can to, you know, win each race in the lead up to possibly winning the gold. And this time around, Mohamed Khatir gets him, but it was all very close. And it was funny because they shared a moment where they looked at each other right before crossing the finish line in 13:30. And from that second heat, I think the other person who looked really good to me is Justin Knight.
Oh my gosh.
Can
we all have Justin Knight's running form?
It's perfect. He's also the nicest guy in the world. If you haven't heard his conversation with me from a couple weeks ago, that's on the podcast feed as well. But then, you know, right behind him, Kiplimo and Cheptegei from Uganda were right on their heels. So it is going to be yet another stacked race, and the way that the 10K unfolded was just sort of like the second half of it was really the top stars going against each other, and it was like, well, if you cut a 10K in half, that's a 5K, and we're gonna see basically maybe a rematch of that minus Barrega.
Yeah, I think Khatir is the one to watch here, and I think when Ingebrigtsen decided not to do the 5K, I saw things really open for Mohamed Khatir of Spain,
who's just had an insane improvement within the last year. You charted it out, I think, in the lap count, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's now down to 3:28 in the 1500 from 3:36.
It's wild. Khatir is, you know, he has a very big confidence about him, and his swagger is ready to go. And I think Justin Knight kind of has a little bit of that too. So all of them at that race, where they were competing against Jakob Ingebrigtsen, you know, they were all went well under 13 minutes. So I think we're going to definitely see a very, very fast men's 5K final.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Diamond League in Italy.
Yes. I knew it was Florence. In Monaco, but
Florence,
was,
yeah.
Yep. Khatir ran 12:50 there, and it's like, you know, I think,
and then he ran like three other weeks in a row too, just popping off, like,
yeah. So that was probably our best indication of what we might see in the final, and I hope it goes that fast again.
So tomorrow we're gonna see kind of the wrapping up the heptathlon and the decathlon, so we're not gonna get too far into that. We also have the men's javelin qualifier, so we're gonna cover those finals when they happen. But I think the story of the day, women's 800 meters.
So, Chris, let me tell you what happened.
I know what happened.
In case you didn't know, it's a really good day to be 19 years old and setting a national record.
Any day is a good day to be 19 years old.
But especially if your name is Athengmo.
Yeah. You know, we were wondering what she was going to do. And when she walked out, she was so confident.
Just happy.
She had a hairpin and said, confidence.
Wow, didn't see that. It just
guess what?
Subliminal messaging
after.
And when I saw her walk out, just reading into this as we always do, I was just like, "Oh, she's gonna win!" And she did what she's been doing all along, which is taking to the front, running on the outside of lane one.
Made Kyle and I nervous. We're like, "No one slot in there. That's a thing spot, please."
But she's proven that she can negative split in 800, no problem. So even though she came through in, I believe, 57 mid high, she starts winding it up, and this is just not what people are used to doing in 800, and it seems to really be catching everyone off guard, and they don't know how to respond.
I will say that the pack was there far much farther than I thought would be, until 600 meters, and really it was at 600 when Athing and Keeley really started pulling away. Gemma Riki was right behind them, and quite honestly, I thought Gemma Riki got third because Raven Rogers was out of my screen. She was so far back in seventh place with 80 meters to go and comes up on the outside on the right and just tags Gemma Riki at the end to secure bronze. Kyle goes, Raven got third. And I literally thought Gemma Riki did because I did not see Raven. She's absolutely stealth.
Yeah, at first, I think you probably thought it was one of those situations where like the gold medal winner gets the flag, and then like someone else who came in 13th place is gonna piggyback on the celebration.
It was like in the 200 with Lamboa, they both got flags.
It happens all the time, which is, you know, I think for smaller countries, it's such a big deal, obviously, to win a gold medal. So they do that, but you don't really see Americans do that.
I thought she was just happy for her.
No, she went from 7th to 3rd, and it's just like she did in Doha. She just has this next level gear, and
you just wish she was a little bit closer to the front, because could that 3rd have been gold? I don't think it could have been gold, but I think it could have been silver. I really do.
In the future, maybe, but not today. This was a things race.
And Kaylee Hodgkinson has had a dream season. One of the things I saw online today, she was like, I'm going to celebrate for one night in the pub. And the joke was that she can do that because she's from England and a thing can't because they're both not 21. She's like, I'll have one night and then go off the rest of the season. So you're going to keep seeing her on the circuit, but really phenomenal. Weird to see her walk down Jemariki, because Jemariki can't be that much older than her and was kind of this bright shining star in 2020, you know, doing so well at Millrose, crushing Europeans.
Well, things just change so quickly. Think about the 2016 Rio Olympics. A thing was 14 years old.
Yeah, she was definitely still running.
Does that math check out? She was 14.
You can have Olympic dreams then.
So right now, the idea that there's someone in Paris who's going to win the whole thing that we're not even remotely aware of, like not on the scene at all, even on the junior ranks, is going to come up and then dominate. Like, that's what happened. Things change very, very quickly. And it's just like the nature of the game.
Got it.
So this is my question. And I'd posed this to Chris earlier, and I want to hear your take, Dana. Are you more impressed by athletes that run really well at a young age or athletes who run really well at an old age?
Younger athletes don't have the weight of the world on them. They walk out, they have a certain level of confidence. And I think at some point you get injured, you have something go on, you have to fight through a lot of things. So I personally think it's more impressive that if someone suffered from a bunch of years, had injuries, come back and perform at a high level versus being really young. You don't know no other way other than just running free and naturally. And that's beautiful in its own way. And you can absolutely tell for these young athletes. But I do think the older athletes who have been able to maintain, it's like you said, track careers are not long. So if you can have an incredible 6, 7, 8 a decade, it's like, I think that's way more impressive. Here's in my book.
I think, Chris, do you have a take on this?
I have to say I'm more impressed with old people running fast. And that's, there was this race in late May that I partook in, and I got walked down by a 57-year-old man. And so I have to say I'm really impressed with when old people run really fast.
Yeah.
Say old a little bit more directly. Old.
I think the difference is mentally... physically, I'm more impressed by young athletes because it's just the ability to like do something so incredible with honestly not that much training under your belt. Mm-hmm. As opposed to old athletes, I'm more impressed mentally that you still have the ability to keep going and pushing and showing up late into your 30s.
Yeah, definitely. So, no, I agree. And I think that a thing, Mo, this 153.28 world record from 1983, she wants it. She's called her shot. She called her shot for the gold medal, which is crazy, but what a thing, shoots her shot. She gets it. So she wants that world record.
She also said she wanted to double in Paris in the 4.8, which to me, it's just like, I don't know, enjoy it one night. And then like, let's start thinking about Paris, right? Like that's just won.
That's some young person energy if I've ever heard.
Well, so here's the tricky part to that is that will the schedule allow for it? And what is Athingmo's star power going to be? She has the next 2 years to really prove herself in both of those two events, because kind of in the past, we've seen the schedule be toyed around with to cater to a star. So like it could be Allyson Felix or Shawnee Miller-Weibo for them to try and pull off the 200-400 double. But now you've got an 800 star saying like, hey, I think I could win the 400. I like the confidence there.
That's kind of like us doing the podcast scheduling around you.
Yeah. Yeah. So... that's exactly what it is. We're recording this at 1 o'clock in the morning because the morning sessions are a little bit busier for me.
So I overall, a thing just, you know, the 400, she was right now, she would have been ranked number 2 as you have to take out the Namibians as they weren't eligible to compete. And going back to NCAAs, I had said, after she set the collegiate record for 400 meters, I was like, she should run the 400 at the Olympic trials. So that way she can guarantee herself making the Olympic team. She can run the relay. And she also would have a gold medal threat in the 400, which still seemed true. I mean, you know, who's to say that she wouldn't have, or she wouldn't win the 400 as well. But I will admit that I was wrong, and she outperformed my 800 expectations significantly. And that's big of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's big.
That takes a real big person to say that they were wrong.
I'm excited for her, you know, putting this out there that she wants to take down the world record, because it's not an easy one. 153.28 by someone who a lot of people have widely thought is very suspect to cheating. And
she's kind of like the Wikipedia search image, if you question that.
And there was a recent New York Times article about, I think it was like 2 years ago, with Jamila Krajalova.
Can't believe you can pronounce some of these names. Did you learn that in journalism school?
Yeah, no, sorry guys, that's
no,
not
I str- my I really stumbled on that one, but before I did look up how to pronounce Anita's last name.
Try it one more time.
Jarmila Krajalova.
You're overthinking it now.
See, this is where the young athletes come in.
So, what I think it's been in question for a while as to, like, when is this record going to go down? And Caster Semenya has been the person in recent years to be like, oh, is she going to be the one to finally take
Even
it down?
Even Ajay at one point.
Yeah.
She thought she could do it. It's 2 seconds.
And people get closer and closer, they realize that taking off these little chunks of time is really, really difficult. And I'm sure it's the same way. I mean, Kyle, I guess when it's a 1500 meter runner, like to think that, oh, if all of a sudden you're a 330 flat guy, that you could be a 327 guy, 328 guy, like that's a lot of time, and it's hard.
Something that I just want to, I wasn't even paying attention to anything you were saying, because it just had a flash into my head from the Texas qualifier when I said you'd have to be in 155 shape to medal at the Olympics. And Let's Run got on me saying that, like, no way.
Quote tweet them now.
And I think I was right.
You definitely were.
All right. What were you saying? You're saying something
about... I was saying
about
something about taking off little chunks of time, especially when it's like...
Oh, well,
like
that's...
Like a 330 guy to a 328 guy, that is vastly different.
And that's, you know, flipping back to Carson Warholm's 400 record, I think that was one of the things that was so impressive to me, is that he was dropping such a huge chunk of time, even still, when you're already the world record holder. And then, you know, extrapolate that to the 800, where... The thing is already the gold medal winner.
She hasn't been doing the event that long.
And, you know, she did it, but it wasn't even the perfect race. Like, you know, they say that positive split of 2 seconds, the 800 is the optimal way to run.
So she needs to run.
Theoretically, she would go 55:57.
Yeah. That would be the perfect way to go about it, right?
Yeah, and ideally a rabbit for 600 meters, or I don't know. You'd obviously have to bring in like Raven to do that for her.
Ooh. Yeah,
I'm sure there's some rule against it happening, and it doesn't even have to be like a legit thing, but like it's just like a one-off exhibition thing. If Caster Semenya has been training throughout this whole entire thing, I know.
Someone tell me the answer to that one. Has she been training?
Yeah. Well, if she was like. I know for a while going for the 5K standard, but held on to sharp 800 meter speed. Someone get me an exhibition where you put a Thing Mo and Caster Semenya and throw Kate Grace in there and like some of the rest of the Americans, Laura Muir. I really would want to see that race, but I just don't know if there's anything against a Caster competing against them. Like they're, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I'll compete. I think I'm in like 155 shape right now.
I'd love to. I mean, just an exhibition to see how fast someone can go, even if you threw in a couple male pacers in there.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's like we've seen, they did it for breaking two and all this kind of stuff. Like,
get me the lasers.
Yeah.
I think the magic moment of the night has to be a Thing Mo.
Yeah.
Hands
wire
down.
To wire. And to think that you are the star and you can command that race from the front. That's guts, I think, too.
She gets
magic meets guts.
You're doubling up.
We're doubling up.
I think so.
We got to talk to our producer, see if that sort of thing's allowed.
Oh, the guy who's going to be up at 2 a.m. producing this thing?
Yeah, we got to talk to him.
You can share gold medals. You can share magic and guts.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap up, Dana, what do we have tomorrow morning here in the States?
Well, it's today. And
oh, yeah. In a couple hours, yeah.
We got, you know, more events in the decathlon, but really we have the women's 1500 semifinals. We have the heptathlon. We have the 400 women's semifinals. We have the women's 3K steeplechase. We have the men's hammer throw final. We have the men's 800 final. We have the men's 200 final. The mornings are about to get spicy. And we have, tomorrow night, we only have one more evening session, so you can stop hearing us complain about our sleep schedule.
Yeah, because we'll probably be trying to record a little bit earlier and, yeah, and then still having this podcast for you guys out daily. So I'm excited for what's to come. And
I'm barely going to sleep, but it's okay because my favorite events are tomorrow and I can't wait. I'm like a kid on Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, when you love track and field, I would...
When you what?
When you love track and field.
Oh,
I love track and field.
So maybe
I love track and field.
If you love track and field, then you know that it's worth getting up for.
Rise and shine.
It always is.
Love it.